What do you think?
I think we're dead meat. Real dead meat.
You're dead meat!
Go ahead and laugh, you guys. If I ever find a little passes of business, you're dead meat.
Welcome to the Dead Meat Podcast, an extension of the YouTube channel Dead Meat. I'm James.
I'm Chelsea, and we're boyfriend and girlfriend, and we like to get scared together.
Yep, and today we're talking about Invisible Man, The Invisible Man.
Yeah, we're going way back.
We're not talking about the novel about racism, Ralph Ellison.
I kept Googling Invisible Man, and I didn't realize I was on the Wikipedia for that. And I was like, this is an allegory for racism? Holy shit.
Yeah, I remember in AP English in 11th grade, it was like, we're reading Invisible Man. I was like, oh, cool. That's like that sci-fi thing, right? And it's like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Very different things.
This is The Invisible Man, which we watched because we just went to Halloween Horror Nights, where they have a very cool Universal Monsters maze.
It's so cool.
One of the best mazes there this year.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And I think we both felt bad about not having really seen those movies. And I think part of those I've seen, you know, like we've all seen parts of those movies. We're all familiar with the famous scenes in them. But I don't know if I've ever actually sat and watched a Universal monster movie.
I don't think I have. I've watched Nosferatu tons of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I watched a Dracula. I don't know if it was a Christopher Lee or another one, but I don't think I've watched the Universal ones. But this box set just came out. This kick-ass box set of Blu-rays with over 30 of the movies. And it's like Invisible Man, Wolfman, Frankenstein, Dracula, Creature from Black Lagoon, Phantom of the Opera.
Phantom is in there, yeah.
All I know is that Abbott and Costello are all over
They're
that box
all
set. Because they meet all those fuckers.
The nation's top comics, Abbott and Costello. Petrified, but hilariously. The dangerous and terrifying Wolfman. The vampire Batman, Count Dracula. The most dreaded creature of them all. The Frankenstein monster, plus a couple of luscious but designing females in the spookiest laugh fest on record.
I don't think I've seen any of those. They're all old movies. This one's from 1933, the first year of FDR's presidency.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these are old movies. Specifically, this one is Pre-Code.
Pre-Code.
We've talked about this before.
I think the big classics are Pre-Code.
Yeah.
I think the first big one to come out and be super affected by code was Bride of Frankenstein,
because
that was 35. So I think that one they had a little trouble with. But I'd like to cover that one eventually.
Yeah,
because it's the same director.
We've discussed the Hays Code before, but just briefly, it was the movie industry's regulations before ratings were a thing.
Yes. Yeah, so what happened was before 1934? Mid-1934 is when the codes start. So before then, movies were kind of like, whatever.
There
wasn't
man.
Any regulating body put in place to keep movies from not doing certain things. Then there's a big to-do by specifically Roman Catholics in the United States were protesting against immoral content in film. And there was the threat. It got to be such a big deal that there was the threat of the government getting involved, and there was the legitimate threat of there being government censorship against films. So the film industry was like, "Well, we don't want that to happen. Let's just we'll do that ourselves, so that it's us doing it and not the government doing it."
Yeah. So Hays Code isn't a legal law; it's a self-governing type thing.
Yes,
it's not like an act passed by Congress.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, exactly. This is a board put together by the MPAA.
Yeah, and after that came into effect, I think movies got lame.
Yeah, because Hays Code, what you can look online at the list of things that you are not allowed to do in movies, and it's all
the fun stuff.
I mean, it's all this stuff that is interesting about humans.
Yeah, especially stuff that's pretty integral to this genre.
Yeah.
The horror genre.
And it's also just a pretty stark illustration of where we're at society-wise at that time, because things that are considered immoral in film are things like interracial partnerships and, you know, homosexuality and any implications of sex, you know. So that's kind of
all the fun stuff.
All the fun stuff, exactly.
But this was made before that, And so it's got a lot of murder, dude.
Yeah, it does.
Got a lot of murder.
Lots of murder. And I think too, it's fair to point out that after Hays Code, there's still, you can have movies with murder in them, but you have to have your villain be an obvious villain. They have to be punished.
Mm.
Yes. So that's why...
This wouldn't work then.
Not really, no.
I mean,
he's a little gray.
Oh, he's very gray.
Yeah.
Yeah, Invisible Man's a dick.
Yeah.
Jack Griffin, mm-hmm. the character. Now, obviously, like we just said, we haven't seen we're not experts on these movies or these properties or these characters, because Jack Griffin has his own Wikipedia article. I couldn't even begin to get into that. Is he part of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, too?
Yes, I'm going to assume
there's so much of this that we are 100% ignorant of. Please excuse that. We're just going to talk about this movie, the one that started it. I mean, it's based on the H.G. Wells book.
Yes, and that came out 1897. I did some research on just what went into making this movie and the actors and filmmakers involved, because that's always really interesting to me. I think old Hollywood people have such crazy lives. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I think it's hilarious that today... We maybe think it's a modern idea that, oh, celebrities, they just get married and get divorced. And
do click on way worse back then.
Me too. Go to any old Hollywood celebrities Wikipedia and look at how many times they got married. It's so many times.
Case in point, Mr. Claude Rains here.
Yeah, our very own Invisible Man married 6 different times.
Damn.
Yeah, but that, you know, I expected that. I think every actor / actress from around then was married like 5 or so times. So.
And he's an English actor,
mm-hmm.
and this was his American film debut.
Yep, and then after he goes on to be in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Casablanca, Lawrence of Arabia, a ton of other shit.
I'm sorry, who's he in Casablanca, the villain guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
How can he close me up? On what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Claude Rains is a villain. Like, he's typecast as villains.
Yeah.
He's always playing bad guys. That's what he's known for.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He's great. I mean, most of this movie is a voice performance from him.
But it's still so good.
But it's still great.
Yeah. Everyone's accents in this are off the walls.
Yeah. The tavern lady's my favorite.
Yes, she's talk a lot about her.
Playing his love interest, which is a movie creation, not originally in the book.
This is not in the book, no.
Is Gloria Stewart.
Guys, Gloria Stewart. What a woman. Because this is going to turn into the Christopher Lee minute, but for Gloria Stewart.
Okay.
Because she's also someone where when I was reading her Wikipedia, I was like, damn, that's a woman right there. She like, she lived a fucking life, dude. She was a labor activist starting at a very young age. She wanted to join the Communist Youth Party in the U.S., but was too young. You couldn't join if you were under 18. So, but she still got really involved with labor reform and labor activism. She was one of the founding members of the Screen Actors Guild.
Nice.
Yeah. And she helped form the Hollywood Anti-Nazi League in 1936.
Yeah, kick those Nazis' asses.
She was also an environmental activist. And then she, after she retired from acting, she became an artist, did all kinds of stuff, printing, painting, decoupage.
And yet that wasn't her true retirement.
Hold on, we're
going
to get to that. We're going to get to that. She also did a lot of bonsai tree work. And if you live around L.A., you are familiar with the Huntington Gardens, which is one of our favorite places on the planet. There is a exhibit there of bonsai trees, and a bunch of those bonsai trees are ones that she pruned. she died at 100 years old. Bam. What a woman. But
you know what she did before she died.
You may know her.
Oh, you know her.
You know her, especially if you're our age. Most famously, she is Rose in Titanic.
That's right.
But now you know there was a man named Jack Dawson, and that he saved me in every way that a person can be saved.
She's present day Rose
mm-hmm.
in Titanic, and she
bookends
was
that movie.
Nominated for awards for that?
Was she?
I'm not sure, actually.
No, no.
Yeah, she came out of retirement, I think, to play that role.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Throw that necklace in the sea. Spoiler, sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, what a fucking woman. I love learning about people like that and running into people like that when we're doing this podcast.
It's crazy. Because here we are reviewing a movie from 1933. with an actress who we know from a movie from 1997.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Incredible. And then also we have Henry Travers playing Dr. Cranley, who is Flora's father in this movie, who you may know from It's a Wonderful Life. He's the guardian angel. I think that's his most famous role.
Well, who are you then?
Clarence Oddbody, AS2.
AS2? What's that, AS2?
Angel, second class.
And the director, James Whale, was openly gay during his time in Hollywood.
Seems to me a joke leaps out at the screen when you see very camp actors. I think that is the word that we have to apply to James Whale's movies, camp. It's a good word. It's often connected with being gay. It's an irony which you're laughing at the world, but you're really enjoying it at the same time.
I really want to talk more about him in another podcast because he also did Bride of Frankenstein, and that movie, a lot of critics believe that there is a lot of homosexual subtext in it.
Interesting.
And that's something I want to talk about on a queer representation episode, which is going to happen. I just asked someone to be a guest on it, and they said yes.
Nice.
And I won't say any more than that.
Yeah, we should also maybe consider an episode on the Hays Code and how it affected the genre.
Yeah.
And just delve deeper into that era of film history, which is what we're all about here on the Dead Meat Podcast, which is such a good product, Chelsea. You're so good at it.
Oh, thank you.
Everyone loves it.
Thank you.
Hell yeah. So proud.
So this movie, though, I think is really famous specifically for its effects, its visual effects, which are a lot.
It's a guy in Invisible Man.
Yeah, they still like.
They're fine.
Yeah, they hold up.
It's, yeah. I mean, half the time when things are moving around the air, it's obvious it's on wire. Like, you can't see the wires,
but
they're moving
wires
through air in a way where it's like a person's not carrying that.
Yeah.
The wires are carrying that.
But it's still
great.
It's still so much fun. The effects in this, I have a team here credited for all the effects. We've got John P. Fulton, John J. Mescal, and Frank D. Williams. Frank D. Williams patented this effect, I think, in like 1918 or something. like
so
early ass film. Yeah.
Talking about things 100 years ago.
He patented the traveling mat, which was used in film up until pretty like recently. I know Star Wars
is a precursor to blue screen and green
exactly.
screen.
Exactly. Yeah. This is blue screen before film is in color. Hmm. So what you would do is you would film an actor in front of a black background. And in this case, the Invisible Man, the stuff you want to be invisible is also black velvet. So his head is like in a black velvet thing. So when he's like unwrapping it, the black blends into the background so that the like part of the frame that's black, you overlay the whole thing on top of the footage that's supposed to be the background.
Yep.
So the stuff that is in the foreground, which in this case is the Invisible Man, is moving around the image and is in there, which is why it's a traveling mat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, I would love to see pictures of Claude Rains in like black velvet pants on set.
Oh, I'm sure that maybe you could find those.
Maybe.
I know those DVDs came with
A lot of
behind the scenes pictures and stuff.
Yeah, I'd love to check that shit out.
Also, we have, John P. Fulton he was like a special effects guy, and he did a lot of stuff with Hitchcock later, and he did the effects in Vertigo, I think, maybe most famously. That whole sequence, if you haven't seen Vertigo, is so cool.
Fulton said that the most difficult shot in the whole film was one in which the Invisible Man is seated in front of a mirror. This required the filming of 4 separate pieces of film and later combining them together, because you needed to film the back of the Invisible Man, you needed to film the room that he's seated in, then for the reflection part, you needed to film the wall that is in the reflection, and separately, you needed to film the front of the Invisible Man as he unwraps himself.
John J. Mescal did cinematography on Bride of Frankenstein. It's kind of neat looking at these old movies and seeing how much crossover there is between people. Oh, and this part of the thing I was reading points out that near the end of the movie, I didn't notice this, but now that I think about it, it's kind of funny. The footprints the Invisible Man leaves in the snow near the end are shoe prints, but they shouldn't. He should have bare feet.
Yeah.
So his shoes were invisible.
Clothes.
Yeah. H.G. Wells, he read the book this is based off of, The Invisible Man, didn't like this movie that much.
Yeah, well.
And his whole thing was that his character in the book doesn't go insane. Character in the movie, the Invisible Man, goes insane because of the experiments he's conducting.
Yeah,
because
in the movie, it's a side effect of what's making him invisible.
Exactly. Because then I think the filmmakers were like, well, we want him to be...
at least a little
You
want
to be able to identify with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And makes sense. Think he also, yeah, he didn't have the girlfriend. He didn't have friends.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yep. There ends up being a bunch of sequels for this. So we've got, so the original is The Invisible Man, got The Invisible Man Returns.
With Vincent Price.
Yes.
As a different
Invisible
Man.
That I would love to watch. Mm-hmm. The Invisible Woman.
Yeah, which I think is more of a screwball comedy.
Okay. Invisible Agent. The Invisible Man's Revenge, and of course, Abbott and Costello meet the Invisible Man.
All of these on Blu-rays in that set. Check out that box set, dude.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've scrolled through my Instagram feed for Deadbeat James, where I just follow horror accounts, and just so many people posting pictures of that, being like, look what I got.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's a really cool box set. It's also nice to get a box set of something where there's not going to be any more movies.
Yeah,
you know?
This one's done.
We're done with these. They're old. We've got them all. We're good.
Yeah. If the Dark Universe ever takes off, you can get a separate box set. But
is that still happening?
No. No, it is not. Thanks, Mommy. Good job.
I know there were rumors of a Johnny Depp Invisible Man movie.
That's right. Nope, that would have been part of it.
All right, so let's get into the actual movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and this movie was produced by Lamley.
Carl Lamley.
Yeah, Lamley, and he's the namesake of a movie theater chain that's here in LA. I don't know if it's elsewhere. Probably not.
Yeah,
but,
we like those theaters.
They're nice theaters. They're yeah. Cool.
So yeah, our movie starts. We have a man arriving at the Lion's Head pub on a really snowy night.
Yeah, this all takes place in England.
Yes.
In the southern England in Iping is mm-hmm. the city name? Town?
Yeah.
It's a town. It's a back lot set.
Yeah, that's fair. Everyone at this pub is just hammered.
Oh yeah.
You got classic dude he's pretending to play the player piano.
I saw some dudes throwing darts.
I love that there's a table of women just like throwing back these giant beers. They show them for a little bit, and I just want to know so much more about them. The Invisible Man shows up. We don't know he's invisible yet. I mean, obviously we do because it's clearly the Invisible fucking Man.
He's got the bandages yeah. around his head and these goggles
mm-hmm,
and then hat and a big trench coat.
Yeah, so he shows up.
He demands a room and a fire.
Yeah, and the laughter just dies in this pub because this guy is freaky and he won't take off his coat and hat.
Yeah, because she off the lady of the house, I guess.
Yes, Jenny Hall.
Fucking great.
Mrs. Hall.
Yeah.
Could I take a coat and hat, sir, and give them a nice dry in the kitchen?
No.
There's a close-up of her looking, like, her reaction.
It's
looking
very
into
good.
The camera. I would love a gif of it. Anyone, yeah. Anyone want to give that to me, please?
There's a lot of really good gifs in
yeah,
this movie.
Yeah, because, like, in these movies, like, they'll have the two-shot or the faraway shot of people talking, and then if they want a reaction, it cuts to, like, them
so
looking into the camera.
Close, yeah.
Close up. It's so weird and hilarious. And this lady has a lot of them, and she's fucking great.
It's a lot of fun watching older movies because we hadn't quite figured out the language of cinema yet, so it's like you get these weird reaction shots that now it just feels so fucking out of place, but they're great. So she when after he's given his room, she tries to bring him food and tea, and she sees his face partially unwrapped, and I don't think it registers to her that he's invisible, but no. It looks weird, like,
yeah, they think
weird.
He's been in an accident and is all bandaged up because
yes.
It's like a snowstorm outside and he comes in from the storm, and they're like, oh, did you get hurt somehow? The lady's acting, I forgot to write down the actress's name.
Whale's unparalleled flair for sardonic and unexpected comedy became his hallmark. He typically saved his most memorable touches for an always colorful supporting cast.
Take Una O'Connor, for instance.
Do you suppose that I'm going to carry trays backwards and forwards all day? Luncheon's at one, and it's 1-0.
Someone who, I think H.G. Wells very much appreciated her
I saw that,
yeah.
That she was his favorite part.
It's very theatrical.
Yeah.
Long shot, long takes of her just like, you know, doing actions. And I love her until she starts screaming.
She screams a lot.
When she turns into the, like, hysterical character, oh, fuck.
It's a lot.
And it's like, it's that... It's the screaming that overmodulates the sound recording devices they have.
Yes.
They didn't adjust the volume for it.
Yeah.
So it's just like...
Yeah, she, to me, sounded exactly like members of Monty Python do when they do drag, yeah. when they're like the British kind of granny character.
She sounds exactly like what
she sounds like. It's so great.
That's it. Comes from next door. Penguins don't come from next door. They come from the Antarctic. Burma!
There's a lot of weird Monty Python characters in this movie, like mm-hmm. the cop, who we'll get to later.
Also, I love how apparently mustard is such an important part of the meal that when she forgets to bring it up initially, she brings it back and it's a no-knock mustard delivery. Like, she just opens the door for like, here's your mustard. That's when she sees him partially unwrapped.
Yeah.
It's like, you fucking gotta have that mustard, man.
For what?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in England. You probably got to slather it on all the food there. Ha ha! Gotcha, yeah, England.
Blood pudding or whatever the fuck you're eating over there. Baked beans.
Only baked beans. Maybe with mustard. Whatever.
We should just go back to at Universal Studios at Wizarding World. You can get a proper English breakfast at the Three Broomsticks.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it looked a little questionable. But also, I can't eat half the stuff in it, so...
I think I got it.
It's a lot of meat.
And it was gross.
Really?
Maybe. The other plot, or I guess the parallel story going on here, is of his employer, Jack Griffin's employer, who is Dr. Cranley.
Dr. Cranley.
And his daughter, Flora, who is Jack Griffin's fiance.
Yes, and to clarify, yes, Jack Griffin is the Invisible Man.
Yes.
None of the characters know this yet.
No.
They just know that Jack Griffin has gone missing.
Yes, they're complaining about him missing. And I just love out like, you know, yeah, I guess back then.
You could just go missing.
Oh, no, I was going to say you just work for your fiance's dad. Like, you work for your dad-in-law.
I mean,
I guess that's not too uncommon now.
No, because I promise this is related. We've been going through old family pictures. My mom has a bunch of stuff. And from around the same time period, it would have been like the 30s. And sure enough, some of the stuff we have is like, my great-great-grandpa with my great-uncle who worked for my great-great... You know, like, they all worked at, like, an insurance company. So, like, that just... Yeah.
Yeah, like, you get a job, and your boss has a daughter, and, all right, I guess that's my wife now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Jack Griffin's been missing,
mm-hmm.
and Flora's worried, because they're together. They're a thing.
But there's another guy working for Dr.
Kemp.
And it's Dr. Kemp.
Dr. Kemp is just like, this is my chance.
Yeah, to get with Flora.
Yeah, he wants to get with Flora.
Mm-hmm. He's got slick back hair and his little mustache.
Dr. Kemp cannot read the room.
Flora, dear. Please, darling, let me tell you how I feel. I can't work or sleep until I know.
Oh, leave me alone!
I do love that their claim to fame in the science world is they discovered more about preserving food.
Yes, food preservation science.
They saved thousands of stomach aches. You know, it sounds funny, but no, that's like legit important.
Yeah, that's in the original Wicker Man, that's kind of, not. It's not exactly the same, but they're like, it's like food science, and like that's what made them their fortune originally, is like... engineering food.
What's the process called when you like can something? I forget.
Canning?
No. Like the stronger one. Sorry, this is going to sound dumb.
Pickling?
Nope. Fuck. I don't know. Whatever that discovery was super important. Because you could put food in there and it would stay good forever.
Uh-huh.
Good job, Cranley.
All right. So, back to the...
He never care about anything but tubes and chemicals.
Yeah, tubes. I love that. He'll never love you. He only loves tubes and chemicals. Everyone's voices in this are so fun.
It's great. I love it.
Everyone pronounces... There's a specific way they pronounce the, like, A sounds that I find so weird. It's like the Invisible Men. Like the
There's a way back, you fool. We'll make our plans tomorrow.
You say he brought a packing case up here?
I don't know if this is transatlantic accent because it's all British actors in this. I don't
know.
Oh,
is it all British actors?
No, I mean not all, but Claude Rains is. And,
yeah.
But I know transatlantic isn't part of the reason that was a thing, is because just the way sound was in film, they had to make it so that you could understand. They had to speak certain ways so that, because certain... vowel sounds, I think, wouldn't pick up quite right on.
Yeah, the recording devices couldn't.
Yeah, so that's accurate. Why you've got weird vowels like Invisible Men. I don't know. If that's wrong, I'll cut it all out.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. We have that power. The Invisible Man, speaking of which, is set up a little makeshift laboratory in the room he's renting.
Yeah, so he is having an affair with all of his tubes and chemicals.
That's right, and he's looking for a way back. He keeps saying there must be a way back.
Yeah,
presumably back. From being invisible.
Yeah.
But, dude, you gotta pay rent for your little makeshift lab.
Yeah, we realize he's been there for weeks and just isn't paying rent.
Yeah, and Jenny, she is upset about it.
Yeah, she comes upstairs and she gives him a what for. She's all mad. They all want to kick him out. I think the actual like owner of the pub comes upstairs or a tavern or whatever and is like, "Hey, dude, we need you to leave." And the Invisible Man, before he can say anything else, is like, "You think I'm hideous? Well, I'm doing science, and you're all prejudiced against bandaged up people." And he goes on this whole thing, and they're basically like, "Dude, it's fine. Like, we don't think you're gross. You're just being an asshole, and you're ruining our carpet with all of your chemicals, and you haven't paid rent."
he does keep complaining about their interruptions. He's like, I could definitely figure this out if they would just leave me alone. Ruined by a foolish, ignorant woman."
Yeah.
But eventually, he fucking just beats that owner with a book and throws him down the stairs.
Wow, that guy goes tumbling right down the stairs.
Yeah, and I doubt that was a stunt actor. That was probably just that dude.
Probably
they're probably like, "All right, man, it's in the script. You mm-hmm. read this."
Yeah. This is when the cops get called because they're done, and this is when a cop rolls up.
"Hey, what's all this?
What's all this?
Yeah, what's all this?"
This is our second Monty Python character that
Jaffers
shows up.
Jaffers the cop.
His name is Jaffers. Get Jaffers. The fuck out. Jaffers shows up. Jaffers is the Graham Chapman, like, Monty Python cop. I mean, I could easily see Graham. I'm sure I could find a Monty Python sketch where Graham Chapman is playing this cop.
All right. My name's Police Constable Henry Thatcher, and this is a raid.
At this point, Jenny is just a shrieking,
yes,
like, facade of a woman.
Yeah, because her husband got thrown down.
As soon as that dude came down the stairs, that was it for Jenny.
Yeah, so she's screaming. Mm-hmm. This one, the cops go upstairs and. This is when the Invisible Man reveals his invisibility.
He's all rotten away.
Yeah. What did they say? Oh, but like, he's invisible. That's what's the problem.
Yeah. He's invisible. That's what's the matter with him.
Invisible Man basically it's just a guy getting naked and he's starting to torment them by, you know, moving stuff around. He's throwing stuff.
Yeah, when he's just a shirt running around.
Yeah, he gets completely, he Donald Ducks it.
Yeah, and at that point, the effect starts to show its weakness because the shirt's kind of see-through. It's like if you blend modes in After Effects or Premiere or Photoshop and you use like screen as a blending mode, it gets rid of all the blacks, but it also makes everything else a little see-through, and that's what's going on here.
I see.
Which is funny when this transparent shirt is chasing them around the furniture.
It's fun, but then you think about it, and it's just a guy who, is doing the Winnie the Pooh. Like,
see,
he's got
the
shirt on with no pants.
Throughout this entire movie, I'm like, an invisible man is not a threat to me. I'm not scared of an invisible man. He spends so many of these scenes scaring everyone from like throwing shit at them and like knocking shit over. It's very clear where he is when there's like cups coming from one point in the room at you. It's not like he's like omnipresent. He's still just a dude. You just can't see him.
Yeah.
So go punch him and hold him down and beat the shit out of him. It's not hard.
I mean, they kind of figure it out later when they try to catch him with giant nets.
They come up with some funny ass
ways. It's my favorite thing is that the big climax of this movie is the cops just trying to catch him with a net.
They fucking link arms Red Rover style to try to
so
stop
good.
Him. Yeah.
I love it. And you just know that any remake of this would involve the climax of this being a big action sequence. Also, I guarantee if this got remade that the invisibility would also give him like super strength for some reason.
I'm sorry, it has to, because otherwise, like I said, there's nothing scary about an invisible man.
But I love that the climax of this is so much more like, realistically, if there was an invisible man, like real life, someone did this and they were a threat, it would be a bunch of cops just trying to fucking catch him with a net, you know? It'd be so fucking lame and awesome. Okay, so he jumps out the window of this tavern and goes to wreak havoc on the town surrounding
it. Yeah, this is a fun sequence. Where
it's so much fun. This is when they, you know, they had a meeting where they were like, okay,
what can he do?
What fun stuff can we do?
Oh, how about knocking over a baby carriage?
Yeah,
Christ,
okay.
Dude.
He basically like spikes a baby onto the ground. He like tips this baby carriage over.
It's like, oh, steal a bicycle, knock an old man's hat off,
sure,
fucking
fine,
curb
fine.
Stomp a baby.
Yeah, that's like, all right, whoa.
Oh, Jack.
A lot.
Chill out, dude.
Yeah, I like the bike.
The bike's a good bit. It's a
I'm still not sure how they did that either. I love when I watch an older movie, I'm like, I have no fucking idea how they did that.
Yeah, it might have been on a track. I don't know.
But you don't see any.
There was snow. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really
cool.
Yeah,
me, Universal, you fooled me.
Yeah. Poor old man. He's like, hello, Grandpa, how are you? And then takes his hat and throws it. I love talking like Claude Rains.
It's a lot of fun.
So while this is happening, Dr. Cranley tells Dr. Kemp that he realizes that Jack has been, because apparently Jack's been doing science in his private time and he doesn't know what, but he was looking at the list of chemicals Jack's been experimenting with and he's like, oh God, Jack left here with a bunch of monocaine.
Monocaine!
Monocaine!
What's that called?
Monocaine. Will it turn me invisible? Not at all. Never mind.
Commit.
No.
Oh, I wanted to hear your best Phil Hartman.
Not at all, my opaque friend.
Yeah, there you go.
So monocaine apparently sucks all the color out of stuff.
Yeah, it was being experimented as a bleaching agent.
Yeah.
But then they discovered that when you stuck it in a dog like scientists would back then, just to see what the fuck happens, that dog went mad.
Yeah, so what happened was Jack Griffin does not know that monocaine makes you go crazy. Because apparently the only papers published about monocaine were papers where they're like, it bleaches stuff, it's awesome. And this information about it being something that makes you go nuts is like, I think what? It's information only like some scientists were privy to or something.
Maybe it's a German scientist.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something happened where Jack does not know that this is what this
did. Yeah, so he doesn't know he's being driven insane.
Yeah, he doesn't know it by he's injecting
himself.
But
maybe he should have realized it when he fucking punted that baby.
Something's weird. But yeah, so Jack's been injecting himself with this over the course of weeks, apparently.
But he doesn't know how to come back.
Nope. So he's trying to figure that out. So Jack breaks into Dr. Kemp's house and...
Where there's a radio broadcasting news about him. And at this point, the radio broadcast is like, this whole town has gone mad. They're thinking that there's an invisible man and many people are injured, probably from punching each other, thinking that there's an invisible man.
Yeah.
But I love how in this movie, and I think all old movies, like the radio voice, there are no effects done to it.
Oh, it's
just a person's voice.
This is the national station broadcasting this evening's news. A remarkable story from Country Village.
That reminded me so much of how, like, the news report about a town that's gone crazy. It's so interesting how many times in history that's happened.
Yeah.
I think most famously the one where I think it was medieval Germany. I'm not sure. Yes. Where everyone, or not, you know, it was the one where they danced themselves to death.
That's right.
Yeah. But there was like a laughing.
Well, see, you know, that town
laughter.
Was originally the town in Footloose and they overcorrected.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when you've been starved and then you eat food and it just kills you because you can't handle
it. That was them.
Yeah. So after this radio report plays, he turns the radio off and is like, yes, there is an invisible man and it's me.
It's me.
I'm
Jack
in your
Griffin,
house now.
And I'm smoking a cigarette.
That's right. He asks for a cigarette and he smokes it. And here's, okay, you know what? If I was going to nitpick it, like so many nitpicky channels do. I would say this is an error and I cannot accept this plot hole. Later in the movie, Invisible Man says, I can't be invisible. I have to wear clothes after I eat food because you can see food in me. If he's smoking a cigarette.
Where's that smoke?
It should be in his lungs.
I want to see little
unacceptable
lung-shaped clouds of smoke in his torso region.
Plot hole. This movie sucks.
Fake.
Zero stars. So he wants to be partners with Dr. Kim.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. He's like, I'll rule the world as a... No, that's the news broadcaster voice. What's Claude Rains sound like?
I'll rule the world I'll rule as an invisible man. And...
No, that's some Twilight Zone stuff.
Oh, am I getting a little Rod Serling? Imagine, if you will, me ruling the world as an invisible man.
Yeah, no, he's real excited to rule the world as an invisible man because he thinks that that's all it takes to rule the world.
It's great because he's telling Dr. DeKemp about his plans, and he's like, we'll start small, a few murders here and there. And you're like, whoa, dude, what?
Yeah.
And he goes, murders, train wrecks. Like, what?
He lives up to it. He does that.
He does exactly those two things in this, murders mm-hmm. and train wrecks.
Well, he also mentions rape in his plans. He does. And thankfully, we don't see any of that, yeah. Jack Griffin.
Yeah, you little pervert.
Yeah. I don't know why he needs a visible partner. That's his thing. He's like, you'll be my partner in the spectral realm, and I'll be invisible. And
but then he also says, and then I'll take breaks once I figure out how to get back. I'll take breaks, and then you'll be invisible.
And you'll be invisible, and, like, and I'll be visible. Like, all
right, whatever,
dude. What? Like, your whole power is to not be seen. You're kind of negating that by having a sidekick who's visible.
I think it's probably just so if anything happens, he has someone to throw under the bus.
I guess.
Because I don't think he's doing it out of the goodness of his heart.
No. Although, by the way, we haven't mentioned his laugh. It's great.
Oh, yeah, it's really good.
And that's the thing that stood out to me in the maze.
Yes.
When you walk by, Invisible Man is a very short part of the maze.
But it's just so like one cool. Part.
Very cool looking.
It's such a cool effect.
And like, there's dialogue playing, and then he just keeps laughing and laughing, man.
Yeah, and he's laughing his tits off. He's just...
his invisible titties off. Yeah. And yeah, it stuck with me, and so I was very thrilled to hear it in the movie as well.
Yes. And
I'm assuming it's Claude Rains himself?
I think it is. I think it's dialogue about... I think it's... Some of the dialogue was from the tavern when the police are trying to get him, and he's kind of monologuing.
You're crazy to know who I am, aren't you? All right, I'll show you.
Also, yeah, his threat when Kemp is like, I don't know about this. He's like, I could take my
clothes
off.
I will take my robe off. So he's just threatening to get naked. And he's like, no, God, please.
Please, okay, I'll do it.
Just like, I'll show you nothing.
Because I'm not gay or anything.
Yeah, I don't want your invisible dick. Yeah, but it's hilarious that this movie, for most of it, it's a man threatening others. He's planning world domination by threatening to get naked in front of people. And everyone's like horrified by it. But yeah, he puts on this like robe. He has like a sleeping robe, like a night robe,
and he gets
smoking jacket kind of,
I guess. And he gets more dark glasses, and they have like, they're like a 90
these
degree.
These are the
thing.
Iconic.
Yeah, these are crazy. What's the purpose of those?
I don't know. I think they're like horse blinders, kind of.
Yeah, they're
so
cool.
You're protected from the side too. They're pretty cool.
I like it.
Although,
I love his
you
look.
Wore those now, you would look like the biggest asshole. Those sunglasses.
Yeah.
Those are like, I just think of, they're like steampunk.
I was going to say,
you can't wear them. Yeah, yeah. You look like the biggest.
Unless you have a whole steampunk get up.
That, yes, that's fine. But if it's just
it's
that
just the
and a fedora, that
oh, God.
Sucks. Don't
Sorry.
Do it. Mm. You got to either do it all or don't do. Those are my
no
fashion.
Half measures.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, the cops are questioning all these townsfolk. The police captain's pissed because he thinks this is all a hoax, and he's very upset about it because everyone's wasting his time. Which, to be fair, yeah. Like, if I'm him...
I guess it's a whole town telling him what's up.
Yeah.
But I guess everyone's drunk all the time, so that's his excuse for not believing them. But then the Invisible Man is there because him and Kemp are back to get his books that he left in the office.
Jack remembers that he left all his books upstairs in that room
in that
he
room
was staying
that he rented,
in.
Yeah.
So
he gets those and then
he
fucks with them all.
He can't help himself. He can't just go upstairs to get his shit. He has to come back downstairs and start just throwing stuff everywhere. Yep. He kills a cop.
He does kill a cop by bashing him in the face with a table. That sounds cool. No, it's just like a table lightly falling on this dude's face.
Yeah, there's not any gore.
There's
in this
weird lack of sound effects in this movie.
Uh-huh.
Not all the time. Sometimes they have sound effects, but sometimes stuff is moving around and it's like, Just foley some shit in, man.
Yeah.
Let me hear something to make me believe it a little more. Sure. I do like how Jenny, at this point, when she realizes the Invisible Man is back in the room, jumps up on the table as though he were a mouse.
Yeah.
She grabs
her skirts
and, yeah, it's great.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, this is around when Jack tells Kemp that food is visible inside of him while it's digesting. Dirt is visible under his nails. Rain will gather, they'll run off his shoulders so he can't go out when it's raining because there will be just a person shape.
See, so many fucking...
There's a lot of drawbacks
to this. Yeah, dude, and you have to be naked.
And you have to be naked.
Dong to the wind.
Yeah.
To utilize this power.
Yeah, it's not great.
Do you want to walk around town without shoes or socks on?
I would just, if I did that, if I were an invisible person and I was just walking around naked, I would just have nightmares all the time. Not about, you know how you have nightmares where you show up to school naked, but this would be like, oh my God, I forgot to turn myself invisible.
Yeah, nightmares.
It's not even that I'm naked. It's like, oh no, I just forgot to do that one part. The police begin searching.
Also, I've had a naked nightmare within the past couple of months.
Really?
It's so weird how that's a thing. It's weird.
Yeah, I feel like that's just always a thing. That and I always have nightmares about not studying for tests.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still, or not memorizing lines or something.
For our younger listeners and viewers, that shit...
That doesn't end.
Yeah, school will PTSD itself into your dreams.
Yeah, for real.
10 years, 15 years later, you're still going to be having dreams that it's like, oh, fuck, this test I forgot to study for.
Yeah. The police are offering a reward for any information about the Invisible Man, £1,000. I did the math.
Yeah.
Okay, so £1,000 is 1933.
Mm-hmm.
That comes out to, and I did this on a few different sites because I thought this seemed insane.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out to £68,000 today.
What's that in freedom dollars?
Freedom dollars is about $90,000.
Wow.
That's so much money.
Damn. Just for a tip on how to get this Invisible Man? They have some good ones. Ink guns and something else.
Oh, what, for catching him?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is great. There's a lot of people calling the police who are like, I know how you can catch the Invisible Man. And it's everyone just pitching their really weird ideas for how to get him.
Two guys. And then the third is Kemp, who's like, no, he's actually here. Come get him. And I was like, no, have a third joke.
Oh, yeah, rule of threes.
Yeah,
maybe.
Man. Although I don't even know if they were meant to be jokes, because I think later they have those ink hoses, don't they?
Yeah.
When they're waiting for him to come over the wall. I don't know, man. It's an old movie.
Yeah. I still laughed because it's just everyone trying to get that sweet cash.
Mm-hmm.
Flora finally wants to know what the fuck's going on because everyone's just kind of keeping it from her. And her dad finally tells her and she's like, well, I'll just go get him because he's my fiance. He has to listen to me, which, yeah, you know Kemp, what? Makes sense.
Kemp calls Dr. Cranley and tells him, hey, Jack Griffin's here. He's the Invisible Man.
He's the Invisible Man. This is a problem.
Yeah. And so, the doc brings his daughter after saying, leave me alone. Both of their scenes together start with her coming in, saying something, and him being like, leave me alone.
Father.
I wish you'd leave me alone, Flora, when I'm working.
What is it? Tell me.
Oh, leave me alone, Flora, please.
Flora and Dr. Cranley show up at Kemp's place. She finally gets to talk to him and see him as the Invisible Man. And she asks, why? what have you been doing this whole time? And he tells her that he wants to do it for glory and
power.
Totally for her.
Unlimited power. He says he loves power. Yeah. He also says he loves her funny little hat.
Yes, your funny little head.
That funny little head I always liked.
You know what? Right before that, I forgot to mention, there's a cool, very modern, sleek kind of thing where the cops are discussing their plans, and it starts with a meeting of them talking, and then the it goes into a voiceover as there are these wipes. They're like wipes of all these scenes of, people preparing and stuff. I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah. It's often, it is weird because we take that for granted. Editing like that.
Yeah.
But someone had to figure out that's a cool way to do something.
Yeah, to be like, oh, you know what? We want to see people preparing for this, but we also want to hear this information. What if we did those at the same time? Instead of having the scene of them talking and then the scene of them preparing.
Yes, which if you are watching really old movies, that kind of stuff is happening and why it's... Ooh, silent film class, probably one of the worst. It's tough.
Yep.
Because at that point, we hadn't figured out how to really streamline shit. I will, you know what? Big ups for this movie. It is,
72 minutes.
72 minutes.
Hour and 12 minutes, yes. Man. Go watch that shit while you're in the bathroom. You can do it.
Yes. I think... It's not even that it was a bad movie I wanted to be over. I loved it. It's a great, it's a legitimately great movie. But I love so much that I didn't need any more of it. It does what it wants to do, and it doesn't pad itself to make it fit this arbitrary 90 minutes.
Well, you know, I think movies back then were closer maybe to 70 minutes than 90.
Yeah.
Which is fine with me, man.
Yeah, great. I'll take it.
Don't be longer than you need to be.
Yeah.
This is when he's saying that the moon's afraid of him.
Even the moon is frightened of me. Like, what? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, dude, you're crazy. And he's telling Kemp awesome. They can be bosom friends.
We are partners. Bosom friends.
Yes, I great. Love bosom it's friends.
Not even bosom buddies, which is at least bosom an alliteration. Yes. We'll be bosom friends.
Shoot, I wrote down that line somewhere about the moon being afraid of him.
It's even the moon's frightened of me. You nailed it.
I got it, okay.
Yep, you got it. I thought you had written it.
No, I just remembered it because it's great.
Even the moon's frightened of me.
So yeah, the cops show up and they Red Rover towards the house.
Yeah, they form a giant circle. Arms linked. Hands.
And obviously he gets through that. All you gotta do is fucking crouch.
Oh, importantly, she tells Jack that, hey, the monocaine made you go crazy.
Oh.
After he's like, your dad's an idiot. I'm awesome. And I'm going to rule the world. She's like, yeah, well, the monocaine's making you lose your mind. So,
yeah.
So and, there.
And on his way out to get through the cops, very good defense line, he tells Kemp, I shall kill you. I shall kill you. I shall kill you tomorrow. I shall kill you at 10 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, dude.
That's literally, he says it like 7 times.
He schedules his murder at 10
o'clock.
And then
he runs out there and he swings a cop around by the feet.
Yeah, it's so
and then
good.
The guy's pants come off. He like flies out of his pants.
Yep. I love it.
It's great, dude.
I love it. Oh, after the Invisible Man escapes the cops, he just starts stripping again. And then he's a pair of pants skipping down the street. And it's, this poor woman is screaming and running away. And he's singing.
Here we go gathering nuts in May, nuts in May, nuts in May. Here we go gathering nuts in May on a cold and frosty morning.
They tell the cops, like, what's his name? Dr.
Cranley tells
Dr.
the cops.
Dr. Cranley tells the cops that
hey,
it's Griffin.
Griffin. It's my employee.
Yeah.
Fuck. He's Invisible Man.
So they're on the hunt for him. And
listen, Kemp's losing it because he is going to get murdered at 10 p.m.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, we can use that. He'll show up at 10. We'll just be waiting for him
there.
We'll
use you as bait. We'll totally protect you. It's fine.
Yeah, meanwhile, Invisible Man is on a fucking crime spree.
Oh, man.
He kills people looking for him, mm-hmm. and then he crashes a fucking train.
Yeah. So what did you say he's commonly on the list of?
Yeah, if you look up lists of like, what horror movie villains have killed the most people, as I know you all have, don't fucking lie, you've all Googled that before, I have too, don't worry, but it's my job. Jason tops the list no matter what, but on many lists, you'll find at number 2, Invisible Man.
Wow, because of this train.
Yeah, he crashes this train, and they say
100 people.
100 people died
they
in the train.
They confirm 100 people.
And then I think they say 20 died in the search party, so it's like, puts him up there. I think that puts him over Michael. Maybe not.
Wow.
Michael's got a lot. He's over 100.
Wow.
And then Freddy's chilling at like 40 or something.
Ooh,
like that.
Really?
Freddy's low, man.
Yeah, but his it's the quality. Yeah.
So,
oh yeah, he robs a bank at this point. He's throwing money around. He walks outside. He's like, I'm the Invisible Man. Look, money. Money, 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 money.
Money, 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 money.
A present from the Invisible Man. Money, 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 money. Money, 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 money.
We cut back to the cops. This is when they have the giant net and these little like guns filled with paint in them.
They spray a cat.
They do. They spray a cat on
and
accident.
I think they
paint.
Fucking really did it because there was a white cat
a
and then there was
cat.
A very wet black cat. And I feel like they
sprayed that cat.
Yeah. Hope that cat's okay. Well, that cat's dead.
Yeah, that cat's very dead. Their plan is to send Kemp away in this getaway car. And so Kemp gets in this car and drives away and oops, Jack is just there. He's in the backseat because he listened in on their plan. Yeah. But he was following him the whole night. So he's in the back of the car and he hijacks this car and tells Kemp to fuck himself and ties him up, puts him in the front seat and is like, I'm going to send you over that cliff. And he tells him that he's going to basically just put the car in neutral and let the
Kemp's
car.
Kemp's like, I'll do anything you want. And he's like, I want you to die. And he fucking sends that car off the cliff and it blows up.
They blow up
he
a car.
He just kills Kemp.
Yeah. Wow. He kills him good. Like that car goes up.
Which I
in
guess
flames.
Doesn't happen in the book.
Yeah. Okay.
The Kemp character is a character, but he does not get killed.
Okay.
So this movie was like, no, we're going to just fucking kill
him. No, fuck it. We're just going to do that. It's a good scene.
It's great.
I couldn't tell if they destroyed a car or like what?
Or if it was like a miniature or something. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. It could have been a car where there's not any insides to it.
Oh, yeah. Just like a shell that they threw off.
And they put like pyrotechnics inside. I don't know. I don't really know. Effects on that scale, I don't really know how that's done.
But after a good night of killing, you gotta get some rest.
He goes to this barn and lays down. He's naked because he's invisible, and he lays on this hay, and he's like,
"It feels good.
Feels good."
It's like, no, it doesn't.
It feels awful.
You're laying naked in a stack of hay.
Ew, I would be so itchy. I'm allergic to hay. I'm allergic to everything, but I just think about that.
There's
mice
in there.
I feel like I'm getting hives thinking about it.
Oh no.
Yeah. Then this the guy who owns the barn comes in. And realizes, that's Invisible Man right there.
Because he's snoring.
You
need some nose strips if you're going to be Invisible Man.
I do love whenever he sits or lays down somewhere there, you do see the imprint of his body. Like, there's a shot, which is maybe my favorite shot in the whole movie, where he sits on a chair and you see the little butt imprint.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And Kemp is like,
his butt.
So shapely.
And it's so naked. He's like, his naked ass is all over my chair.
He's fucking sweaty. His taint is just.
You can see, like, the imprint of his invisible balls just, like, in the chair. Like, no, damn it.
Yeah.
God, where are we even? I'm just thinking about his.
Well, the guy,
chair.
Quit thinking of his invisible dick, honey.
I can't stop.
The barn owner goes and tells the police, and they smoke him out.
Yep.
Smoke him out by lighting it on fire.
They light up that barn, and the barn doors burst open, and the invisible man walks out. And this is when there's the footprints in the snow, and they should be feet.
To create the invisible man's ghostly footprints, foot-shaped blocks of wood were dropped out of a specially constructed platform covered with artificial snow.
They shoot him.
Yeah, they shoot him. They shoot the invisible man because they can see his footprints. He didn't think of snow.
Yeah, idiot.
Yeah, you idiot. I mean, they could have. That was my idea. I would be that person calling the cops and be like, I have an idea for how you can catch the invisible man. I'd be in that montage. Just like surround the building that you know he's in with just powder everywhere.
Yeah.
Because then he can't jump down or...
Like that shit you put on a carpet before you vacuum.
What?
Did you not push it on a carpet before you vacuum? Like a powder?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that before.
Yeah, because that's what my parents would use to make big bunny prints on Easter and say that Easter bunny was
right.
With that powder.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
They don't kill him right away. I guess they shoot him through both lungs, though.
They shot him through both lungs. That sucks.
So he gets taken to the hospital, and the doctor tells Dr. Cranley that he's dying. We shot him through both lungs. So if you can get your daughter to come see him, because apparently, I don't know how they know this, but as he's dying, they know that the invisible stuff will wear off, and he'll turn back into a dude. Which is a cool effect.
Yeah.
Because as he's dying, he turns back into a person, but...
Skull first? Like
yes,
skeleton
it's
first?
Really cool, because they could have just had it fade from invisible to a person laying there, but they have it fade from invisible to a skeleton to a person, so it's kind of like he's coming back from the inside out, which is really neat.
Yeah.
I liked
and,
that
that's
last
Claude
effect.
Rains. It's
yep.
One
Handsome.
Clear shot of him in this movie.
Yeah.
Laying on the bed
looks
dead.
Young in yeah. this. Yeah. That's that.
That's The Invisible Man.
It's a short movie.
Yeah, it's a fun watch. It made us want to just watch that whole fucking box set.
Yeah, it really did. Like, seriously, don't discount these older movies, especially these pre-code movies, if you think older movies are boring. Honestly, a lot of them are.
Yeah.
Because they're so restricted.
Yeah. And even this movie, like, old movies, they have a different style. They have a different cinematic language.
Yes.
People act different, and, you know, you might think it's cheesy or it's... just accept it.
You have to remember, too, back when we're first starting to make... Because at this point, movies where people are talking are, like, 5 years old.
Yeah.
And you have to remember
this is fresh
that,
out of
like,
silent films.
This is... They're learning how to act for film, because... Back then, there is no way to act for film. You just have acting for the stage, which is a totally different style. And we know that now. But back then, you have like stage actors coming to do film.
Yeah.
And even older movies, too, you have the issue where stuff is shot like a play because we just hadn't, you know, come up with ways to shoot that maybe look closer to what we do now.
Yeah.
Where it's like not shot like a play.
Yeah,
where it's like head-on shot of like big open room.
Like sitcoms, where there's
sitcoms a set. Are very much like that, yeah.
Yeah, there's a set, you shoot from one side of the set, so you always see the same sides of the room.
The scenes in this where they feel the most like a play to me are it's the beginning with you meet Dr. Cranley and Dr. Kemp, and then Flora comes in.
Yeah.
It's all like in this big open kind of mansion space, and it goes from like room to room where it looks like they're walking through a set.
Yeah,
and like that goes is open on one side. Mm-hmm. So that's often what you get with these older movies is we're kind of like they're taking their knowledge from stage acting and stage performance because, yeah, they don't have a reference for film acting or any like blocking or anything like that. It's people figuring that out because it's so new.
Yeah, but still a lot of fun.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like this is so you get like so many inklings of modern film in this that it's really cool to see. And I think these older code movies too, it feels so much more real. Like, I don't know, I feel like I have an easier time seeing the people making it than I do with like the bigger like Hollywood style, very squeaky clean.
Definitely,
you know.
But yeah, it's just like it's crazy how old this movie is. Probably every single person who worked on this movie is no longer living.
Yeah, probably.
You know, assume that you're about 20 youngest working on this. That means you were born in like 19-oh-whatever.
Yeah.
You're probably dead.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to see something that old.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just cool to see something that old, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, check it out. And then you can extra enjoy the maze at Halloween Horror Nights.
Ooh, which you should definitely go to. If you haven't been to Horror Nights yet, if you're in L.A. or LA or Florida, if you're in LA or Orlando, definitely watch the movie and then go through.
Yeah, and this is one of the best mazes. There's a lot of good mazes this year, but
this is one of the best ones.
Yeah, this and
sure.
Poltergeist are probably the two best.
Mm-hmm.
Dope ass mazes, I love it. Can't wait to go back.
Yes.
But next week we have a very fun episode.
My goodness, we filmed it already.
Yeah.
And I have to edit it, but oh my goodness,
it's gonna be great.
It's gonna be
you're gonna
sexy.
Love it. It's Horny for Horror,
yeah,
and Dead Meat Podcast joining up.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
And we're playing a very fun game.
Yeah, so in this week before then, go listen to Horny for Horror. That's Horny, the number 4 horror. Just so you get to know them, there are three hilarious, they're three of the funniest people I know.
Yeah.
All of them huge horror heads.
Yeah.
And if you're a patron and you've listened to commentary tracks, you've already heard Adam and Mono, who have been on commentary tracks with us, and then Betsy is one of the funniest people who's ever lived.
Yeah,
and they joined us and it for a very fun game. Trust me, get pumped.
Yeah,
it's fucking great.
Yeah,
cool. But until then, oh, I guess social media, Dead Meat James, Twitter and Instagram.
Yep. Carevecc, CareVecc on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want merch, deadmeatstore.com.
That's right. And you can email us at deadmeatpod@gmail.com with suggestions, yes. Comments, feedback.
Whatever.
Anything. We'll read it. Might not respond, but we read them all.
Yeah, I definitely try to read them all.
She
yeah.
Reads them all. Yeah. Cool. Until then, I'm James.
I'm Chelsea.
And this has been the Dead Meat Podcast.